League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what a big sound. Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank on Branham. Brian's behind the glass, and it is a Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Everybody have a good weekend?
Yeah, how are you? I mean, you've been out for a little bit. You doing all right?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Brian, do you have a good weekend?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Good show on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's about the show, Jeremy. Let's not forget that.
That's good. He cares about his profession, right?
I guess.
Well, yeah, I said the weekend's good. If the show was bad, I would tell you the weekend was bad. But it went well, so the weekend was good.
Don't let the show dictate your weekend. You've got a good family.
Yeah, you used to say that about who said it. You would let your whole weekend be either ruined or celebrated by the result in that.
Well, I celebrated.
Joe win?
Yes.
Yeah, they kicked my butt last week.
I like to hear it. That's what I like to hear. That's good news. That makes my week.
I brought up the scenario, though. I said, what if Jeremy's out and we run the table, go 5-0, but then we decide that we don't want to do that?
Huh, that is interesting. Yeah, I guess we have to workshop that.
Yeah.
I vote for if you sweep it, game over. That's my vote.
I know where you would vote. Yes.
If my vote counts, since I wasn't a part of it whatsoever, so I'm not sure that it should. Did the Astros have a good weekend?
You know, I guess it could have been worse, so at least it was salvaged. The fact that they didn't get their doors blown off, per se, and obviously Friday night ends up a 5-run game, but that was a 1-run ball game late. It could have been worse, but with the combination of losing 2 out of 3 and losing Isak Paredes, it wasn't great.
Yeah. I think it would qualify as a bad weekend. It's not as bad as it could have been if you lost the game yesterday. I mean, the Astros were down 3-0 after 4 innings yesterday. Hunter Brown was on his way to leaving the game, and Brian Wu was pitching a gem. Like, it didn't look good entering the top of the 5th inning yesterday. But the Astros figure out a way to win. A huge win. Good, bad, ugly. We always start with the ugly if the Astros lose the series. So we'll begin there. But it leaves a good taste in your mouth that they were able to win yesterday's game. At the top of your bad or ugly list, what's the one thing that is really sticking to you right now as we talk?
I mean, Isak Paredes getting hurt, to me, kind of trumps just about everything else on the list, because no matter what happened in terms of the outcomes of the games, that guy has been kind of one of the big glue pieces that have kept it all together, no matter where he was batting in the lineup and the way he was able to produce for power and also to get key hits at key times and play a solid third base. That one, to me, was first and foremost on my list, because that was the first one where I took a step back to say, like, how much more can they take?
Yeah, that to me is the biggest thing, too, because you start to wonder, too, like a spot is said immediately after the game that it doesn't look good. Okay, like, this is an organization that is always like, oh, yeah, things are great. There's nothing to see here. Like, Isak Paredes, the first time he pulled his hamstring, he's going to be back in a few days, and actually was. Pena has a broken bone in his rib. No big deal. He'll be back in 10 days. Jake Meyers, calf strain. He can play through the calf strain. No problem. Oh, boom, he's out forever. Yordan Alvarez, oh, he's got a broken bone in his hand. That's no big deal. He can swing through it. So whenever, like, you have an organization that their voice is usually optimistic, right? Like, you could have an opinion on the Astros injury stuff, whatever. It's kind of a separate conversation, but they always err on the side of optimism. And when Joe Espada immediately after the game is like, it doesn't look great, I don't like that quote a whole lot. That terrifies me a bit.
And also think about this, Jeremy. It's the fact that it's the second go-round with the same injury, and we don't have to look too far into the past to realize that, well, we had Jake Meyers nursing an injury, and he kind of pushed it, and he came back. And then, lo and behold, same calf, Now it's worse. Now you're looking at an extended period of time. It's the same kind of thing with Paredes. You're right. The first time he wasn't out all that long, we actually thought he probably should and maybe would be out longer. But now because it's the same hamstring and the fact that you have to wonder about, you know, when you do pull a hamstring or at least whatever he did the first time that looked like a slight pull, if it doesn't completely heal or whatever, you don't know how long it's going to take to really get back to being 100%. But now it's that same hamstring again. You're like, well, does that make it worse? I mean, and obviously it seems like it did.
I thought it was a different hamstring. Taylor Roman, The Athletic, said it was the opposite hamstring.
Okay, that I was not aware of that.
Strained his left hamstring during a June 12th game against the White Sox, and then this one was the right hammy.
Well, that's good to know because I might have seen that. I thought it was the same hamstring. But the other thing to me is on that one, he actually walked off for his own on his own power, the one in June, and then basically, you know, they said precautionary reasons, but he never gave you any signs. This one this weekend, he immediately was hopping and wasn't putting any weight on it. And you're like, that means he probably felt that baseball bat to the back of the hamstring kind of feeling when if it full-blown goes, you're talking about 6 to 8 weeks.
I feel like that would be good. That would be a good diagnosis. Like if you told me right now 6 to 8 weeks, I run to the ticket table and say yes, give me that because that feels like a win. I'm concerned that it's greater than that. I'm concerned that it could be the like I don't know. Like we see a bunch of injuries in what we do and like watching all these games. It's hard to tell the difference in real time, like the difference between a grade two and a grade three based on what we see. You know, we don't have the MRI, we don't have the inflammation. All we have are the context clues of, okay, we saw him get hurt. You mentioned like putting weight on it, the hesitation to do that. We know that Joe Espada immediately after the game was like, this one doesn't look good for an organization that has an optimistic voice. And then he immediately flew home, like on top of that, to like seek further medical evaluation. So I would take 6 to 8 weeks in a heartbeat because that means you get him back this season.
Have you seen anywhere where they gave the grade? I know.
No,
it's
I haven't. No.
See, it went from discomfort and then, as I look it up now, the mild strains, like we saw the first time with him, rest, ice, compression, it could be days to a couple of weeks. The moderate is a grade two, more muscle fibers, may take several weeks to a few months. And then, wait for it, the grade three, these are complete muscle tears. They can take several months, and surgery may be required, followed by extensive physiotherapy. Let's hope to God it's not a grade three.
Yeah, that's where I'm like waiting with bated breath. Like, please be a grade two. Don't be a grade three. Because the difference is grade three is out for the year. Grade two, kind of your timeline, you're going to get them back at some point. You might be without them for 2 months, but you're going to get them back whenever you hope to be playing the most important baseball. So that's I'm with you on that. That was the top of my bad, ugly, however we want to spin it. What else did you have?
I mean, We go with Lance McCullers Jr. I know it was another hot topic on social media and with fans lashing out about the same stuff with a different start. He should never start again. You should release him. This was terrible. But he wasn't great. And everybody that was kind of holding on and hanging on to that, hey, but on the road, he's been really good. And his last road start was against the Dodgers. He's been really good. But it was tough to watch again Saturday night because he was not really good.
That was our list are the exact same so far because that to me was easily like you could have had both of those at the top of your list as the lead bad story coming off of this weekend. His ERA now is north of it's almost 7. Mm-hmm. He's got a 6.90 ERA right now. The whole like oh he's great on the road like the home road splits which that was way too small of a sample size that we're like actually making note of that and using it as a defense to Lance McCullers. Like, oh, he's great. He's a great pitcher when he's away from the dike, but he's a bad pitcher when he's pitching there. No, he's probably just not very good, and water usually finds its level. So that's where he's at right now. Like he went 2 2/3. He didn't make it through the third inning. He went 3 innings against Texas, and yes, he's had these bright spots. But look, there's still a bit of a runway here. Like, you don't have to do anything yet. You're still waiting for pitchers. Now, it looks like the cavalry's coming. It looks like you're going to get some of your horses back, maybe, knock on wood. So you still have a little bit of time. Lance still has a little bit of time. But that decision's looming. Like, it is coming up at some point. Not tomorrow, not next week, but maybe a month. Maybe we're a month away from Dana Brown and the Astros having to decide on what the fate is of Lance McCullers and what he means to this organization going forward. Because I don't trust him.
No, and you can't. And I think that that's the thing. I mean, we said that you have to wait until the cavalry comes. You have to wait till the replacements are in place before you want to do anything that's that kind of final or drastic or severe. But I think that that day is coming sooner rather than later. And I think that not only is it just the fact that you see that guys are getting closer to returning, but the other thing is you have to be realistic in the fact that this isn't this landslide runaway division crown that's waiting for you. And that every game matters from that this point forward. They're going to be more and more important. And if this is the kind of starts you're going to get from him, and he's still battling the same concerns with the fastball, with control, with everything that you watch, how many times can you afford to keep throwing him out there, basically putting your offense in a hole because he's not going to do his part, and knowing the fact that your offense is limited?
Yeah. I mean, like, what is your timeline on it? Like, when you have to make it, if he's still pitching poorly, like, how much of a rope does he have?
I mean, from the standpoint of how many more starts or just once he gets into a start? Because for me, I think that he's still probably got two more starts that they're going to go to him for.
Yeah.
But I just think that the rope has to be super short, and you have to realize, hey, if he gets down a couple of runs, that's where you got to pull the plug, because this offense has shown the ability to come back from a couple runs. But if you're down a handful, then that's a pretty tall task to ask for any lineup, let alone a lineup that has this many injuries already when you're starting almost three quarters of your lineup with Space Cowboys.
Yeah. No, I meant more big picture, and I'm with you. Like, two starts is probably the beginning of the window. I think that the end of the window is a month from now, like somewhere between that span, because like the Astros are committed to the 6-man rotation, at least for a while, until they have like some off days. And I'm all in favor of a 6-man rotation. Case in point, Hunter Brown. We'll get to that in a minute. So like I'm in favor of a 6-man. Like, there's nobody banging down the wall to take his job yet. Nobody's banging down the door. Like, you know, Costanza's probably the next guy up in the minors who, like, he had a better start. Like, I might trust him over Lance McCullers. But at this point, like, Lance is going to get starts over Costanza, even though it's the summer of George. But whenever Javier comes back, should Javier come back? Whenever Arrigetti comes back, should he come back? Which he looked pretty good. Luis Garcia is making rehab starts in A-ball. Like, that's whenever the leash starts to get much, much shorter on Lance McCullers.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that as much as there was conflicting reports and we weren't sure on certain guys when they were actually, like, for Arrigetti, he was throwing BP, when was he going to start doing rehab? Well, now he's starting doing rehab games and things are going well. Garcia, who we thought was behind Javier, and Garcia did a rehab appearance and looked like he was throwing well. Javier has been 95 plus with his fastball. He's throwing well. I mean, all three of those guys, as soon as they're ready, any one of those three guys is better than Lance McCullers Jr.
Yeah, it's that's where you're at right now. And look, the clock's ticking. Like, the clock's ticking. It might not be tomorrow. It might be in 2 weeks. Maybe it's a month. But these pitchers start to return, and the Astros, they get, as soon as they get closer and closer to the finish line too, and the gap in the division is tight, like, you're going to trust Lance McCullers with a start whenever you have 30 games left and you have a 2-game lead in the division? How about 20 games and a 3-game lead? Like, the rope is starting to tighten on Lance McCullers, and Lance McCullers is the first one that would tell you that. He knows that too. 713-780-ESPN. You're good, you're bad, you're ugly. 713-780-3776. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. We're on the Twitch as well at ESPN 975, TikTok at ESPN 975. I'm Jeremy J. Branham there. On Twitter as well at ESPN 975, Blankers at Pac-Man Joel, Brian at Sacked by BMAC, I'm at Jeremy Branham. Plenty to get to on the show today. Texans training camp starts this week, so you know we're going to be dialed in to Texans training camp. I'll talk some more about the Astros a little bit later. Trade deadline is looming as well. John Singleton's number choice was interesting. But more of the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Astros series in Seattle. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
You found the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Texture, of course, they can't lie and be overly optimistic. The injury looked awful, and there's no hiding it about Isak. It did. It looked bad. It came out very, very lame. Isak Benitez. Welcome back, J-Dog. It's J-Bone to you. Blankers was extra sensitive and cranky Friday. Clearly was missing you. I don't believe that for a second.
No,
I don't believe
it, man.
Well, you were in a good mood Friday, right?
I think the only possibility that could be, Jeremy, is when the texter decided to reference both Barry and my wives as PABs, and I said, "For that, sir, you should get you will be banned for the rest of the day from text."
Yes,
and again, did not even ban them. Wouldn't know how to ban them from text, but just said that, and then got like three other texts going, "That's soft. You can't do well. You shouldn't be doing what you did, sir or ma'am," and then you wouldn't have to worry about it.
I love the ban. I like the dropping of the ban. I applaud you doing that. Very well done. They said they called y'all a what?
PABs.
I'm not cool enough to know what that means.
For our wives, not us. Our wives are both
punk ass bees.
There you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There you go. It came to me right after I said that. Mm-hmm. That's not the worst insult in the world.
It's not good.
No, don't. Not it's good, not good.
And not for your spouse.
It's not good. Like, but on a scale of 1 to 10. About a 6 or 7. Like, yeah, it's not the worst in the world. Not good. Not good.
If
but not the
it to
worst.
Me is one thing. If you're saying it about my wife and it's about because of a sports take, you got some issues.
100%. The fact that it was your wife elevates it by about 3 points. Like, if somebody called me a PAB, I would, like, giggle. I'd be like, what? That's an interesting insult. I applaud you, sir. I give you a 2. But because it was your wife, I agree that it does elevate and it does heighten it. No doubt about it. It's PAB. I haven't heard that used as an insult in a long time. Did he say it out loud or acronym it?
He had PAB apostrophe S. Because then I said to Brian,
did he spell it out or did he have the acronym?
It was the acronym.
That's even worse.
And then when I said to Brian and Brian said it, I was like, oh, hell no. Uh-uh.
That's hilarious. I've never called somebody a PAB in my life. Texture about McCullers. Keep him as a long reliever. They can't take over games that are lost. Oh, he can take over games that are lost anyways. Look, I think that's the best role for Lance McCullers. Like, if we eliminated emotion and feeling out of it, 100%, Lance McCullers, mop-up man, long reliever, you just go eat up every inning whenever we have a blowout. Perfect. The problem is you can't eliminate the emotion and the feeling here.
Well,
and the money.
All of the above, and let's also remember that ideally when you would want him to be your long reliever, at least for the rest of the year, he's also on record as saying, I'm not a relief pitcher, I'm a starting pitcher. And that his ego seems to say, I'm not interested in being a relief pitcher, which would completely contradict where he might be have his only role with this pitching staff when it gets healthier.
You know, I would really applaud him and appreciate him and tip my cap to him. And look, if he knocked on a spotter's door and he's like, hey, Joe, whenever it's time for these other pitchers to come up or whenever you don't have faith in me to start a game, I'm willing to accept a relief role. I would respect the heck out of that.
Yeah, but remember now, the opposite, and I don't think Lance is quite to this level, but same. We've had this experience in the past when a starter begrudgingly tried to go to the bullpen and then became a diva and then became the target of our ire going, like, you're not even that good to basically say, this is not where I should be or I want to be, and I don't know if I can be. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It would be, I think it'd be a heck of a move for Lance McCullers to do that. Hey, like, I'm going to go earn it, right? Like, have the attitude of, like, I know I'm not helping the team right now. I'm going to put team first, which is difficult for athletes to do. I get it. Like, I understand the pride aspect of it. But as I always say, I root for the team, not the player. And if Lance McCullers went into Joe's office, like, hey, the moment that you need me out of the starting rotation, I'm willing to do whatever it is for this team, and I'm going to fight like heck to, you know, earn my spot in the rotation again. I would love that. Even if he was terrible the rest of his career, I would celebrate Lance McCullers the day he gets buried in the H if he were to do something like that. And quite frankly, he should. Not necessarily yet, because the Astros are in a six-man. But the time, we're all going to know it. We're going to know when that moment comes. Maybe it's when Arrigetti comes back. Mm-hmm. We're going to know the moment. We're going to know it when we see it. And Lance McCullers should go to Joe Espada's office and say, move me to the bullpen. If he's the whole bury me in the age and I'm a team guy, that's the play, Lance. That's what you should do.
Yeah, I mean, look, from everything that you hear and what you see just on the visuals you get from the dugout and things like that, Lance seems to be a pretty well-liked guy with his teammates. Mm-hmm. When you talk about Jake Overeasy and the fact that he did what he did and who I was referencing earlier, you know, I don't think they're the same kind of guy. I think Lance is more a team-oriented guy, and I think Lance would be a guy that would be more likely to do that. And I also think that if Lance wants to be buried in the H and he said he wants to play his whole career here, at a certain mm-hmm. point, you got to come to that tough crossroads and that hard decision where you think about it long and hard and go, My choices here are I go to the bullpen and I do the right thing and I stick around with this team, or I tell them or they tell me and I'm out of here. And then if I do want to continue my career, it's going to be elsewhere. And that means me and my family and everything else. And I think that that would change his outlook a little bit too, knowing this is your only shot to stay with this team at a certain point.
Yep. No, I love the over easy reference too. That's not a name I thought I would ever hear again, but it's a great pull on your part. Really good pull. I don't love hearing the name, but it's a good pull.
But you remember because it took him like an hour and a half to get ready, and he refused to do anything differently in the bullpen, and then he wasn't great even when he came in, but yet he still kind of just kept chirping about how he was a starter. It's like, bro, at a certain point, man, you aren't that good, and just shut up.
No, I remember. Like, he was kind of in the same role as McCullers a little bit. Might have been better than McCullers, but was kind of in that fifth, sixth, seventh starter role, and he's like, oh, I should be getting starts and all of this, and hey, why don't you do a solid for the team, you know? Mm-hmm. So Lance is the first pitcher to get kicked off the island. Or is it another pitcher to get the boot? He might survive Colton Gordon, but that might be it. Like, obviously, Fromber, Hunter Brown. I mean, obviously, Brandon Walter, right? Am I missing somebody? That's Lance, I guess if you're, like, making the case for Lance, he's number four right now. Like, he's ahead of Gordon. He's obviously ahead of Gusto, right?
I think you're absolutely right about Walter. The more I watch him pitch, and you started by looking at his Baseball Savant numbers, too, but there's no doubt in my mind that there's the one guy that you cannot take out of this rotation right now at the back end. I think it's Walter because he's been phenomenal. I think that we'll see a lot more based on, I'll have a lot more to say about what Colton Gordon does tonight and then base it on that to see how he pitches tonight. Yeah. And then Gusto, look, he did just a solid this weekend by picking up some spot innings here and there. But overall, he hasn't been bad. And we both think he's got major league type stuff.
Uh-huh.
I just think that Lance doesn't. Let's be honest. Aside from his spin, and he has no control of it a lot of the time, his fastball just does not compete anymore.
Bingo. No, like, if my life were on the line, I'd rather start Gusto. But, like, we're approaching this conversation from, like, a Lance McCullers bias, because there is that, because he's making a lot of money, he's a veteran, all this stuff. Like, your rotation right now, if from a Lance McCullers perspective, Lance McCullers biased perspective, it's Hunter, it's Fromber, it's Brandon Walter, it's Lance. Lance is ahead of Gordon, Lance is ahead of Gusto. But then if Arrigetti comes back, Lance is bumped to five. If Javier comes back, Lance is bumped to six. So that's kind of the domino effect of what it's going to take, I think, for Lance McCullers to leave the rotation. Would you disagree with that?
No, I wouldn't.
I think it is.
I just think that it's a tough reality for anybody to take because, and again, like you said, because our heartstrings are with him, hey, he has been a legendary part of this run. He has been a guy that has performed very well over his career with the Astros, but he ain't that guy anymore.
No, he's not. Like, maybe he comes around eventually, but you can't just be losing every single one of his starts while it happens. 713-780-ESPN. What do we expect from McCullers after missing 2+ years of pitching? He's just not the same, and we need to accept that. I think we were the most honest show about Lance McCullers coming back and that you shouldn't expect him to be good. I remember tweeting out, like, do you think Lance McCullers is going to have better than a 4.40 ERA? And the amount of people are like, oh, yeah, definitely, no doubt. That's a dumb question. And I'm sitting there like, okay, you guys need to temper your expectations. He's older. He's years removed from pitching in the bigs. He's got different arm delivery, different slot that he's having to relearn all of this stuff. Because he's so dependent on his off speed and his breaking stuff, he needs feel. And whenever he's not pitching in 2 years, it's hard to have any feel. So we've accepted that Lance McCullers is never going to be Lance McCullers. And because we're saying that he should be the first guy demanding to move to the bullpen to put the team first, that is part of the acceptance process. So I think we've accepted that Lance McCullers is, you know, a guy that maybe could get back some of his glory at some point, but not one of the Astros' best pitchers by a long shot.
See, because when you look at the body of work that you've seen recently out of Lance McCullers, and yes, the Dodgers start was really good, but at the same time, the two things that are the biggest weakness right now, he seemed to have kind of reined in for that start. He has horrible control right now, so he's getting behind in a ton of counts. And then to battle back, because he has no control over a lot of his pitches, he then has to pitch the fastball more, and the fastball is getting hit all around the park because it just doesn't compete in Major League Baseball. And the only way it can is if he's got them completely off balance, getting ahead in counts with his breaking pitches, and they're not really expecting to get a fastball in the inside corner or, you know, when they're kind of getting out over the plate to try and cover the outside corner. So the difference, the big thing here is because the fastball doesn't compete, and that dog doesn't hunt anymore, and the fact that he just absolutely has horrible control in terms of getting behind in counts, he can't compete as a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball right now.
No, I'm with you. We're on the same page. Pete McCullers hasn't been the same since being buried in Philly in Game 3 of the 22 World Series. That's mean, Pete. He should go to the bullpen and be the long guy. I think he'll take that role because I'm sure he realizes he's not even deserving of that role at this point, but that's the best Espada can offer. I agree with you. I hope that day comes if he continues to pitch poorly. And look, he could shut us up. He could have the 12 strikeout performance. He could have the 6 shutout performance in his next 2 starts, and that would shut us up. But as it's going right now, how could you shut us up?
No, I think that's the key too, Jeremy. The door's not shut and locked.
No.
But at the same time, it's closing more and more with every time we see him because he's not doing anything to try and kick it open.
He's not. He's not. I mean, he's forcing your hand in a negative way. Any possibility the Astros release McCullers? I think it's in play. Not imminent. But guys would have to get healthy. Lance would have to continue to pitch poorly. Maybe you add a pitcher at the deadline. It's certainly in play that Lance could be released by the end of the year.
Yeah. No. I think that's the thing. I don't expect it in the next week or two. But as we get closer to these guys coming back, you're going to have to just bite the bullet and realize, you know, it's kind of like what they finally had to do when they had to who's the relief pitcher that they signed to the big deal for 3 years and then
Montero.
Yeah, Montero. It's going to end up like a Montero type deal where as much as it's tough on you and you know it's a bigger number, at a certain point there's just nothing else you can do with the guy that shows he can pitch and help your team and you've got to make a decision.
Yeah. It's a sunk cost fallacy. Like you're going to pay him regardless. Would you rather pay him to pitch or would you rather pay him to not pitch? And the good news is that next year is the final year of that contract, so it is a lot of money, you're right, but it's not super long-term. You're not paying, like, you know, 2.5 years of Jose Abreu. You'd be paying a year and a month or two of Lance McCullers, or maybe they could fake an injury. You could go that route as well. 713-780-ESPN. So I hate to tell you this, but I caught Lion Joe Espada in a lie the other day. More of the bad and the ugly, too. What is your good, bad, ugly? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I got to tell you about the greatness, the fantastic Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. You know me. You know that I like to be outside. I like the wildlife. I like the nature. I'm looking at it right now. It's the best. And you got to get out to Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston. Book that weekend escape or maybe the midweek escape. I don't care how you do it. You do you, boo. Book your stay at twocreekscrossingresort.com right now. From open green spaces to wildlife you don't see in the city. Beautiful, majestic trees and some of the best fishing in Texas. You got to get out to Two Creeks Crossing Resort on Lake Livingston and get rid of that stress and anxiety that's in your life. You don't want that. There's no time for that. Go have some fun at Two Creeks Crossing Resort. And also, you know what's really cool about it? You're there in 90 minutes. It's just 90 minutes from downtown Houston. You're there in no time. You get off work, you're there before the sun sets. Hike on their 92-acre property. Do some kayaking, maybe some pickleball. They have pickleball courts out there for all your pickleball lovers. How about just hanging out by the pool with a drink? That's fun, too. Everybody likes that. Two Creeks Crossing Resort always puts their visitors first, always looking for ways to make their week, to make their weekend. We were out there a few weeks ago, about a month and a half ago now, actually. We got to get out there soon. It's been too long. Food trucks on both nights that we were there, they had some live music on a Saturday night, so they're looking to entertain you while you're there in peaceful comfort. Glamping, cabins, tree houses, pull up the RV. They have the perfect stay for everybody. And you still have time to get in on these incredible savings in July. Now, you're running out of time, so you better act fast, but incredible savings in July. You book 5 nights, you save 35%. You better do it now. Book your stay at twocreekscrossingresort.com. That's twocreekscrossingresort.com.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN and 92.5, 713-780-ESPN. One more quick one on McCullers. Is McCullers' contract too big to trade him? Yes. Simple yes. Yeah. No one's eating that contract. And Lance has 10-5 rights, so he can veto any trade.
Yeah, like, I mean, not that this is going to happen, like, but in the case of Montero, they eventually found a trade partner that they could just dump and then probably have to eat a good portion of the contract. If someone believes that they need a cheap starter and they think that Lance McCullers next year for a couple million dollars might be a guy, maybe you can find a dump and go that bails you out of a couple mil. But yeah, you ain't getting out of that 17, 18 a year.
Yep. You would have to retain like at least 90% of the salary, at least. And you would have to find somewhere Lance McCullers would sign off on going, because he has 10-5 rights and can veto any
trade.
You
might have to throw some other sweetener in there, too.
Perhaps. Like, that's the difficulty of trading Lance McCullers. The reality of trading Lance McCullers is that it is almost impossible. Nothing is impossible, but it is almost impossible. All right, I think I caught Joe Espada in a lie. You guys tell me. So, whenever they announced their pitching rotation for the Seattle series, they had Framber Valdez going on Sunday. He's now going Tuesday. And they had Hunter Brown not pitching in the Seattle series. And then everybody gets to the ballpark on Friday, and the media's reporting, oh no, that's not the pitching matchups this week. It's not the rotation this week. Framber is actually not pitching in this series, and Hunter Brown is going to go on Sunday. Joe Espada was asked about this, and he said that the initial rotation, which listed Framber on Sunday, was a typo. A typo. I'm sorry, but I'm calling this bluff. I am calling BS. I do not believe one iota that was a typo. You might have changed your mind. Maybe Fromber's leg was a little swollen because that line drive caught him. This could be absolutely nothing. But there's one thing that it is not. It is not a typo. I cannot believe that. I will not believe that.
Here's the thing. Like, where did the typo occur? Were you talking to your PR staff? Or is this like, are we to believe that you were typing in your probables and we're going to press send? But then, if it's a typo, does that mean that you spell Valdez close to the same way you spell Brown? Because I can understand a letter here or there, a vowel that might have been the wrong one. But the fact of the matter is that there's no freaking chance that that's a typo like that.
That is insane to me that you would say that. Like, I mean, was it tongue-in-cheek? Was he joking? Like, a typo? What are you talking about?
No, that's one you got to chuckle if you think that's a sarcastic remark.
I would have laughed. I would have laughed in that moment. I couldn't believe he said that. So you 100% believe he's lying there?
Oh,
what a typo? I'm not losing
lying.
My mind? Okay.
Because, look, this is the conversation that you and I had prior to the All-Star break. Like, we saw what we saw. We were happy when Hunter wanted to give it a go before the break and not pitch in the All-Star game. But then based on what we saw, we were like, hey, time out. Here's the deal. If he needs a couple days coming out of the break, he's so important, we can't afford to think about whatever else that they've got to try and replace, do, and get healthy. You can't afford a playoff run of any kind if you don't have Framber and Hunter Brown. So if he wants to take the first series or 2 weeks off, if he has to, you do it because he's that important and he looks kind of gassed. But then you do this whole switcheroo, and it's like, wait a minute. Now I'm wondering about both guys. I mean, I'm wondering, is Framber okay? I mean, is Hunter okay to just come back and start, or is it going to be more of the same? And then from a Framber perspective, are we giving him extra days because of matchups, or is there something we need to be worried about there too? And you know you're not going to get a straight answer.
Well, yeah, I'm really not concerned about them, but I mean, I understand someone having concern about that. How could you not? But like, they listed Framber going on Tuesday, so okay, that feels good. I would guess it was probably to buy him some extra time from that liner that went off his leg. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe the swelling wasn't great. You know, maybe they didn't even see him whenever they announced their initial plans, and then they saw him. They're like, okay, let's give him a couple more days. Like, that would make sense. Like, okay, this is our rotation coming out of the break, and then you see Framber, and he's, like, kind of still limping around, or maybe there's some, you know, bruising or inflammation there, and you're like, hey, let's err on the side of caution and wait until Tuesday. That's totally understandable. Totally understandable. But the typo lie? That is... It's a little amateurish. It's a little amateurish that you're pulling the typo line on Framber. Hey, you know, the leg didn't look great. We want to give him an extra couple days. And look, maybe this is Joe Espada trying to, like, hey, this isn't even really, like, worth mentioning. I don't want to freak out the fan base. Not that they should care about the fan base. But it's just really weird to chalk up the typo excuse. I thought it was parody. I thought it was a joke. And it was not. That is unreal. Unreal to me.
I mean, and if Joe, you see it, I would have been more okay with the humor of, I had a little discomfort when I saw that the probables were out like that, so we decided to make a change. But the typo excuse, I'm not, I mean,
it's insane.
That's pretty
soft.
It's
insane. All right, what other bads did you have, Blinkers?
Let's see. Bads. Look, the call hit by pitch on Saturday night drove me nuts because Just everybody's reaction initially was one thing. But the fact that that's literally going to cost you the game because you're going to say that that's a fair ball when the replay and even the announcers, and I heard the Seattle announcers even say, or whoever, I think MLB Network put out different announcers than TK and Blummer that were basically saying, I mean, it's pretty clear it hits his hand first. Then
you thought so?
I thought
it hit the bat.
I thought it hit the knob too.
Yeah.
I thought it hit the hand first.
No.
Maybe.
I mean, the sound of it sounded like the bat also to me.
Yeah, I thought it was the knob, but I mean, it was definitely one of those like coin flips. I agree with that. It was a tough call. It was one of those where whatever was called on the field stands. And what I hated about it, to kind of back up your point, was that everybody reacted like it was dead.
Right.
And like it's kind of like a foul ball in a way, because like, hey, a foul ball call can be wrong, but the moment the umpire yells foul ball, it's like, well, everybody knows the play is over. And not that the umpire said, you know, time, hit by pitch or whatever. Like, they let it play out. The umpires, I thought, actually did what they were supposed to do. But everybody on the field reacted like it was a dead ball when it wasn't. And I think it changed the way that Hader fielded the ball.
I think you can relate to this from a basketball perspective. Not that you in situations when you have referees. But if you're, like, playing pickup ball and everybody on the floor knows that a guy got fouled, but then the team picks the ball up and throws it the length of the court for a free layup, you're like, no, everybody stopped. So whether it was a foul or not, we start, you know, check ball on top, and we run that play again. Mm-hmm. But the fact that everybody stopped and then it ended up being the play that cost you the game, that sucked.
Yeah, I think it's a really good comp. I hated that game. I hated that game for two reasons. That play specifically, like whether it was right or not, whatever, it was fluky. I hated that the game was determined there, and I hated that stupid wild pitch.
Oh, my God, it's on my list.
And, like, why are you throwing that pitch? Like, dude can't catch up to your fastball. Like, you prove that he can't catch up to your fastball, because what do you do after spiking the breaker? You get him with heat up in the zone, like, on three straight pitches, and he throws a 58-foot breaker in the dirt. It did take a funny bounce on Caratini. Like, it had some funny English on it. I can't really blame Caratini on that play. I would love if he blocked it, and he actually had a really good block on a Hader breaking ball in the dirt in extra innings, or might have been the ninth, I forget. But the wild pitch from Abreu, because like you were a wild pitch away from taking the series against Seattle with being extremely shorthanded.
Yep.
Like, how great are you feeling today if the Astros take 2 of 3 with 70% space Cowboys in the lineup? You'd feel incredible.
No, it was on my list as well because of the fact that just what you said, like, this guy has no chance of catching up to your fastball, and you actually showed it and you knew it. Then why in the hell are you even trying to throw some kind of an off-speed pitch, whether it was the intention to throw it low in the dirt or not? Because of the fact that we know that the cardinal sin about pitchers that drives me nuts is, if you see that a guy can't catch up to your fastball, what's the one pitch you don't throw? A changeup that's 10 to 15 miles slower so he can catch up to something. Yep. I just, he was so dominant with his fastball, and to have that come into play and be a way that they score a run just absolutely drove me nuts.
Especially with that hitter. Like, there's guys, okay, breaking ball makes more sense, but not a guy who can't touch your heat upstairs. Makes absolutely no sense. I think I'm more upset with the called pitch than I am the wild pitch, actually, now as I kind of talk my way through this. Do you have a couple more?
I mean, my bads, other than that, were the fact that, Neris on Friday night was not great.
You might want to DFA Neris.
Yeah. I mean, and I know that he's catching heat for the game on Saturday night, but that's a tough spot for him to get a loss when, you know, you already got the Manfred man rule, but he ain't great. And then Yiner just was not good at all. I mean, he had one hit over the weekend. He's 1 for 14. I need the real Yiner Diaz to come back.
Yeah, that's yeah, he's been the strikeout he had, I can't remember the game it was, but it was like an 0-2 pitch. It was Wu. It was against Wu. It was yesterday. Wu threw him a pitch that was never in the zone, ever.
It was so, like, non-competitive.
Like, you know, most breaking balls will start in the zone, or they live in the zone for like 80% of its flight, and, you know, they dive out at the end. Brian Wu threw a pitch that was never in the zone. He threw a breaking ball in the left-handed hitter's batter's box that, again, was never in the zone, and Yiner couldn't stop his swing on a called check, failed to check his swing, strike three. That was brutal. Cam Smith, I'm going to go with a slight bad here. He did have the 2 RBI double yesterday to tie it, so he was able to cure some evil here, but 2 for 15 overall, not a great series. I'm intrigued with him in the leadoff spot. I don't hate him in the leadoff spot. Give it a look. I'm also, like, with Esau out, it might be a few people getting a look. it might be too early for Bryce Matthews, but I wouldn't hate getting Bryce Matthews a look in that spot and getting Jose Altuve protection. But I thought Cam Smith didn't have a great series. And then the Astros, you know how we mocked them and made fun of them? Whenever Joe Espada won his 100th game of big league career, the Astros admin is at it again, celebrating these very, very minor milestones. The minor milestone of the week, Christian Walker, his 800th major league hit, 800 knocks for Seawalk. Congratulations to Walker on his 800th major league hit. Dude's 38. What are we doing here?
Just tell me. I did not see them put anything out on that. I just know that Plummer and TK mentioned it, and I went, wait a minute. Like, how old is this guy?
He's
like,
old.
He only has 800 hits? Like, what am I missing that Altuve's chasing 3,000 and he's in his late 30s and Christian Walker's got 800?
Like I get that he didn't play forever and he was blocked because of Goldschmidt and he was a late bloomer. Like, I get that. But he's 34 years old. He got his 800th hit. We shouldn't be celebrating that. They celebrate everything
off the radar,
over there.
Give him the ball.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be putting that out with blown some trumpets.
Like, I saw that and I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, I'm going to bite my tongue. All right, 713-780-ESP. Let's take a quick call. Pete on the HRP listener line wants to discuss McCullers. Pete, what's up? Hope you had a great weekend. You're in the high with the bees.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
What's up, Pete?
Hey, wasn't trying to be mean with that McCullers Philly take, but you think about it. He has not been the same since they took him out of the park five times in that game.
Fair.
And being injured, and let's say with the exception of that blast from the past game he had earlier this year with the 12 strikeouts, he just, in my eyes, he just doesn't have it anymore. So either he has to get demoted to the bullpen, or you either release him or trade him if he even has the value. But, I mean, I feel bad for the guy. He's a good guy. He's been one for years for the Astros, but he just doesn't have it anymore. And, hey, by the way, does the IL have a maximum occupancy limit? Because I think the Astros have either met or exceeded that limit. So some of those guys better start jumping off and getting back on the roster here soon.
Yeah.
And Espada in the typo?
It's crazy.
Oh, my gosh. I'm out.
So weird, the typo thing. Good call, Pete. Rack 'em. The injury list is becoming there's not a whole lot of room left on that boat for the Houston Astros.
I mean,
certainly
you think
right
about it, and I was talking about it with some buddies this morning. You could put together an above-average Major League Baseball team with all the injuries.
Doubt.
With a lineup and starting pitching. Now, building the bullpen and everything else might be a little bit more challenging because Dubin's in your bullpen. But when you start thinking about the five starters for sure that we've talked about in the past, when you throw France in there with Blanco and Arrighetti and Javier and Garcia, there's your five.
Yep.
And then you go around the diamond and you know that just you got Rogers at second base is one, Pena's at short, you've got Paredes at third, you've got Jake in center, you've got DeCenzo in right, you've got Yordan in left or designated hitter. Like, already right there, you've got a pretty decent, solid offensive lineup and all the starters, and then you got to figure out first base and catcher for other guys. But it's really to the point of almost ludicrousy where you're like, oh, my God, how many more can they take?
Yeah, it's nuts, man. It is nuts. You just hope that, like, you can you can survive it. You hope you keep your head above water, and then these guys start to eventually – come back. Like, that's the hope. That's the optimism. Texture, the V and B letters are close enough on the keyboard. But how about the Aldez and the round?
Exactly.
Like, the V and the B are close, but the rest of the name is not. Can you really have a typo anymore? What was he talking about texting his starters? Like, I mean, if you're making the defense for Espada here, like, he's not throwing his admin under the bus and it was the admin mistake. Like, that's the only defense I would have for Espada in this case, was that admin screwed it up. Maybe just, I don't know how they could have screwed it up, because they're not putting that out there, or the PR staff's not putting it out there until they're told. They're not guessing. They're waiting until they're told by somebody. So the typo thing just makes zero sense to me.
Yeah, like, it's all behind the scenes because
yes.
McTaggart and Rome had the exact same probables.
Yeah, like the PR staff emailed that in the series release. Here's our weekly series preview release. It had those projected starters, and they projected those starters based on what they were told. Like, they didn't just go rogue and say, this is who we're starting. You know, you think Gene Diaz is just going rogue and saying, these are our starters this weekend? No! Somebody told him.
It can't even be voice to text. It could only be like, hey, I was leaving Gene a voicemail with the probables, and I know that it sounded like Hunter, but it was Fromber. Come on, man.
It's insane. Like the,
I know how a manager, to the rest yes, of us absolutely. That think, how dumb do you think we have to be to believe that that's a typo?
Yeah, like whenever the guys are sending out the email, whether it's Gene Diaz, I don't even know who does it. I don't get the releases. Gene Diaz or Steve Grande or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're great guys. I like those guys. I've talked to them a couple of times. I don't have a great relationship with them. Like in I don't have an extensive relationship with them. I've only talked to both of those guys maybe two or three times in my life. And all of those times were very good conversations. Like, they are good people. Like, I like them for the brief encounters that we've had. But how do these press releases work? Somebody gives them the information, and then they're the middleman to the media that gives them the information that they were told. Those guys are not just creating this out of their own, idea. And you know how else? Like, this is another – there's another piece of evidence here. They got the Friday-Saturday starters right. You think that they knew that Walter and McCullers were going Friday-Saturday just based on their own idea? Or were they told that? So that's why the typo excuse, because we do know a little bit of inside baseball. We know how this works. Manager, probably not the manager. It's probably the manager's assistant, somebody, pitching coach, somebody, relays that information to them. They put it in their release. The release goes out to the media. The media then releases it to all of their people. That's how we find out pitching projections. That was not a typo. No. I can guarantee you that was not a typo in a spot. Yeah, it's a typo. And is it like a little white lie? Yeah. It's not significant, but it's a lie. It's a lie.
I mean, and again, ideally what we were looking for when we first saw it too was that both of them would be in there. But yeah. that I can understand if you were trying to do that too. But yeah, there's just no way. There's just so many things that don't add up here that it's really offensive to think that people are just going to go, oh, okay. A typo, of course. Our bad, not yours.
Yeah, I mean, how stupid do they think their people are? Like, how stupid do they think their followers are? It blew my mind. I could not. I was stunned, and nothing with this organization should stun me. It really shouldn't. But I was stunned when I saw that. Texter at bat is Altuve saying he doesn't want to hit leadoff after jogging in from left. I actually think that was Espada protecting Altuve. I don't think Altuve said that. I think Joe Espada kind of protects Altuve. Cash or trash this. Here's my theory. Okay. I think that Joe Espada wanted to move Altuve from the leadoff spot because he doesn't see a lot of pitches. He swings a lot. Maybe there was something from the jogging in from left, which only matters half the time, home away. But I think that was Joe Espada's way of protecting Altuve from moving him out of the leadoff spot. Was like, let's make this Altuve's idea. He also did this in the offseason. Remember when Altuve, we found out that Altuve was playing left field or taking fly balls in left field? Joe Espada's like, well, he's doing it for Bregman. He's doing it so he can make a run at Bregman. They didn't sign Bregman, and then we found out that Altuve had been doing it all offseason anyways. I think that both examples were Joe Espada making Altuve look really good, like trying not to put out something out there that made him look bad. Like, he didn't want to say, okay, Altuve's not going to bat leadoff anymore because he doesn't see pitches. He wasn't going to be like, Altuve's going to play left field now because he's really bad at second base. So both of those things, which are like kind of borderline demotions, not really, but borderline, Espada had a story to cover up the quote-unquote demotion.
Well, I can tell you right off the top that it's a lot better handling it the way he did than saying I was filling out the lineup card and I had a typo, because that would have been a huge mistake to have Altuve suddenly in the second. But like, realistically, I think that Altuve did you a huge solid, and I think that
we think it was Altuve though.
No, I'm saying the first move, moving him to left field, Altuve does you a huge solid. He goes with it the whole time, regardless of what you say. He's willing to try a new position. You know that for a lot of guys with their egos, that would have been a really tough pill to swallow. But because they did all that, I don't think they wanted to pile on and basically say, hey, look, you don't have it anymore as a leadoff hitter either.
Yep.
And so I think that was like the whole combination of everything leading to the fact that we'll take one here for you.
Yep.
And we'll make this work for all of us.
Yeah, protect them. Like, yep. I don't mind them doing that. Like, I think it's a good move. Like, you protect your legend. Cool. Like,
listen,
that's how you should handle it.
The best coaches and a lot of the best organizations, that's what they do. Whether right or wrong, they are going to bat taking the side of their player to protect them when it comes to, on field and in the locker room in a lot of ways. They're just going to defend you, and I got no problem if the manager wants to defend one of his best players.
I'll even applaud it. Like, I think – but I do – it is a theory of mine, and I applaud – the move, if that is in fact the case. Corey Yiner's reminding me of the year Pena couldn't lay off the slider. See, is it weird that I took some optimism there? Because like, everybody's like, oh, Yiner's awful and Yiner shouldn't be the catcher. Look, I think it's a fair take to have right now. But what if Yiner just has a little improvement laying off the outside slider, kind of like Payne did. Because Payne is not even great at laying off of it right now, but he's way better than he was. What if Yiner becomes, you know, like right now he's got like, you know, one of the worst chase percentages in all of baseball. He's like in the 1th percent. He's like in the first percentile. It's brutal. What if he goes from the first percentile to like the 20th percentile to where he's still bad, but it's a 19th percentile improvement for him. He becomes in a like a way better hitter in the similar vein that Payne does. See, I think he's capable of doing it, which is why I would be hesitant to like be moving Yiner in the offseason.
Yeah, I saw some people, you know, kind of bring that up and wanting to put that on the table to get rid of Yiner and move him, and he's never going to be a good hitter. And I just don't buy that. I'll take the scenario you painted because I believe that as he matures and becomes a smarter hitter and realizes it just isn't coming up there with a you know, with a lot of pop and a big bat in your hand, that you could just make this whole thing work. Hitting is difficult. And I think that he would continue to get better. I think, yeah, if you want to lean on the fact that Pena has improved, because when I looked at Jeremy Pena for the first couple of years, I wasn't sure he was ever going to improve on how bad he flailed at outside pitches. But the fact that he has made the significant improvements that he has gives you hope that, look, between the people, the coaches, everybody working with him, and the fact that as he matures a little bit more, that he becomes a more disciplined hitter, I'm not ready to pull the plug on Yiner.
Yeah, I'm not either, but it is, he does have frustrating ABs. There's no doubt about that. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's get to the good. There was some good yesterday, right? 713-780-3776. Good from the Seattle series. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Message and data rates may apply, or consult a doctor prior to use.
Wow, you look amazing. What have you been doing?
I'm sure you've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and the other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, I found this great company called Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe medications like Ozempic and Wegovy and other GLP-1 medications that are 80 to 90% less expensive, all 100% online.
I can get GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% less and do it all online? No doctor's office or pharmacy?
Yes, Zelthy can provide semaglutide or tirzepatide, the active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s. But for 80 to 90% less and ship directly to your door.
How do I get started with Zelthy?
Call #250 with the word care to get started today with Zelthy. Get the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less and 100% online. Don't wait. Call #250 with the word care right now for a link to your exclusive offer. Call #250 with the word care. That's #250 with the word care. #250 and care.